Hello, and welcome to The Sexual Philosopher. My name is Carlene. You were listening to the first episode of The Sexual Philosopher. The intent of this podcast is to really address an area of sexuality that I think isn't being addressed in podcasts. You know, we have a lot of kink and, you know, sex positive podcasts. Don't get me wrong, this is sex positive, but this is sex positive 101 podcast. I want to talk about the roots of what makes us who we are sexually. I want to discuss our fantasies, our aspirations for our sexual life, what we view as sexually healthy. I'm starting right now with interviewing friends and coworkers and acquaintances. If you are interested, by all means, go ahead and email me. I'll make sure to include that in the description. I can do Skype and phone interviews. So this first podcast is actually with my partner. His name is John. And, you know, I wanted to work with him first because, one, he's really accessible. Two, he's my sound manager right now as I'm learning. And three, because I have a level of comfort with him that I felt would be useful to recording my first podcast on my own. I think it turned out great. I'm very enthused for the next series of podcasts. Yeah, I hope you enjoy, and contact me if you are interested in interviewing. Hello, and welcome to The Sexual Philosopher. My name is Carlene. I will be guiding you through this first episode. This is our first episode. Welcome, yay! I am here with John. John is my primary partner. We live together. I say primary only because it's really just in practice that we're primary partners.
It is not structural.
And we also have our little companion here. It's Loki, the Wheaton Terrier. So if you hear him, you know, we'll try to edit it out, but, you know, he's around. So, all right. So let's get started. John, let's talk about your upbringing a little bit. Tell me about your family structure.
My family structure is kind of what I guess is widely considered to be the norm, for what that's worth, I guess. But basically, I have two parents still together, and a sister.
Okay. Sister is older, younger?
Younger.
Okay, so you're an oldest.
I have a younger sister.
Okay. Your economic background growing up.
Well, when I was a kid, I remember a lot of tension over money and finances and figuring all that out. You know, we never went hungry, but there was definitely a sense that, you know, things might be varying levels of precarious depending on when it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I like to ask these questions. I actually, just quick aside, I like to ask these questions, which I basically took from my other work. I am a surrogate partner, and the very first thing we do the first time we see the client, after we've met with the client and the therapist, is to ask these questions because they can help you glean a lot of information about how people develop their sexuality. So I probably should have said that in the first place, but I forgot. So here we are. talk to me about religion. Were you raised with a religion? Did you, I like to use the term, and it's probably unpopular, but did you experiment with religion? If so, what, et cetera?
Yeah. At one point, I had a cult following of several thousand people. No, just kidding.
He's fucking with everybody. This is what he does.
It is what I do. No, what I'd actually, I think around probably junior high, I ended up going to church. I met a girl at a skating rink, and we hung out, kind of liked each other, and I was talking with her and stuff, and ended up going to church with her. And kind of to provide some context of how all this worked at the time, I was dealing with a lot of like severe depression for a while. And so, and also like, I definitely had friends, but you know, like I just had this overwhelming sense of like isolation and misery. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's fairly typical for many teenagers to feel that way. Mm-hmm. but anyway, so to kind of like quell that, I found like church, and kind of that, what later became a relationship, was a way to kind of like quell those feelings of isolation and loneliness, and kind of like questioning the world around me and like not understanding why things don't work right and why things don't really make sense to me and my sense of how things should be. Okay. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I ended up going to church with her. It was a Wesleyan church at the time. You know, and before then, like most of my church experience was like going for special events with relatives, or when I was with my grandparents on my dad's side, we would go to mass. They were Catholic. My mom's side was like varying degrees of like really not practicing, but mostly kind of centered around various Protestant, you know, sects of Christianity, I guess. Okay. Is the way to put denominations, right? There we are. Yeah. That's the word I was looking for.
I call them sects, factions. I forget. Sex, not sex. We'll get to that, guys. Slow down. S-E-C-T-S.
Sectus.
Sectus. English, you are a lovely language.
I beg to differ.
So, the Wesleyan Church. Tell me a little bit about, just because we were talking earlier, this is the second, let's just be honest, okay? We were recording a podcast and then we accidentally deleted it. So this is round two.
It's okay. We were only 32 minutes into it and like 40 some odd seconds, if I remember correctly. It's fine. Not bitter.
Whoops. it's first podcast woes. It's fine. Everything will be fine.
Until you delete your podcast.
Until you delete your podcast. Just a quick aside. What is the first rule of Hacker Jeopardy?
Don't fuck it up like my pseudonym.
Oh!
That's going to get edited.
We'll edit it. It's fine.
Ask me that question again.
Hey, John, what's the first rule of Hacker Jeopardy?
Don't fuck it up.
And I just did. Okay, so... So we were talking, and I just want to...
Oh, yeah, about the Wesleyan Church.
Yeah, because I want to bring that back, because I think that if you are as, ignorant about religion as I am, which is decently ignorant, you might not know all of the different, factions and things like that. And so what I didn't know about the Wesleyan Church is...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a Protestant... church, right? Mm-hmm. It's Christian, Protestant, and it's largely considered to be one of the more like fundamentalist, literal interpretation of the Bible type churches.
Okay. So that brings me to, well, we're going to come back to that, but I want to talk to you about how you learned about sex.
Okay. Yeah. So how I learned about sex was, I mean, basically I kind of remember vague like references between adults about it and movies, you know, like you never really saw anyone pounding it out in like a PG movie, but you kind of got a sense that there was something going on there. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I began learning about it. And then like I hit puberty in fourth grade and started having urges, and like very suddenly these things made a lot more sense type of deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Did your parents talk to you about sex? And if so, what did they say?
Yeah, they did. But it was mostly stuff like, I'm glad we did this over again because I'm remembering more this time around. But initially, it was mostly stuff about like, yeah, this is a thing adults do, and you know, and they do it within the confines of marriage, and it's a beautiful thing when you're married and having sex, and it's awesome, you know. Mm-hmm. Just general kind of things like that, right? And then also like, don't have sex, use condoms if you do. Don't have sex, but seriously, don't have sex, but use condoms if you do. You don't want to get an STI, you know, like.
So there wasn't much discussion of different aspects of sexuality, i.e. oral, vaginal, vaginal, penile. You're supposed to say that the other way. Penile, vaginal. Sorry, guys.
Order does not matter.
I'm assuming. Penetrative. I'm assuming probably not anal in that case. But like, was there any discussion or even.
Excuse me, podcast runner here. The proper term is penetrative.
Well, but you can penetrate with your hands.
Damn it.
Also penetrate the anus with hands and penis.
This
and
is what toys. I get for going above my pay grade.
So, yeah. I mean, did they talk to you about that puberty, urges, just any,
you know, not that I remember. And I don't remember much talk about explicit like sex acts specifically.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, none of that really jogs my memory.
Okay. Did you learn about sex from school? Did you have sex education? And if so, what did that look
like?
Yeah,
we did. So I actually grew up in northeastern Wyoming. And we did have a sex ed program.
Okay.
And, you know, I remember it being fairly decent. I mean, they didn't talk about homosexual sex or any number of things, but they would talk about, like, you know, you still have the risk of disease even with, like, oral sex acts. And they would, like, talk about how condoms are applied. And they, you know, showed videos of, like, having, like, people birthing children. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was actually, like, fairly tame. But yeah. I think it started, like, in sixth grade and then, like, you know, and that was kind of an interesting moment because when they started talking about that, I was just like, oh, wow. Like, I've been going through this, like, since, like, probably the end of fourth grade. Okay, suddenly a lot more makes sense, you know?
Yeah. So when I went to school, the school district that I went to, we actually had sex ed in fifth grade. I think we touched on it sixth, seventh, but then eighth was, like, the big one again where we had, like, a whole, like, month or two long unit.
Yeah, I think that was it first too, kind of.
Yeah, and then we had it rolled up in into health in high school. So, which, you know, by no means was my sex education comprehensive, but I appreciate that it, because, like, I started developing breasts when I was in third grade, and I had my period by early fifth grade. I was 10 years old. So, like, I appreciate that, you know, yeah. Someone was addressing those things well before, you know, they, you know, or even while they were happening. So it was consent discussed.
I don't think so explicitly. Okay. I don't think it was explicitly mentioned.
Contraception.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. They talked about various methods and their efficacy and a number of other things.
And where you could access it.
But.
Okay.
As I remember, the only way to not get someone pregnant is abstinence.
Yeah. So you had the abstinence. Yeah.
It's very heavily abstinence focused, but I also think that that's kind of like par for the course because you don't want, like, probably as educators and curriculum developers, you're probably not going to want a bunch of parents going like, why the hell are you, like, telling them all my kids about all this stuff and not saying don't do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there are actually certain, requirements. I used to be an educator too, and if I recall, almost every state requires you say that.
Yeah, of course.
So, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of common sense. You wouldn't figure that it needed to be said every other line, but you know, whatever. It's good luck enforcing that.
Yeah. Like, well, you're trying to control a bunch of teenagers who are very curious about something that, you know.
Yeah,
in our gut, we tend to know is going to be really exciting.
Yeah, totally. And you're dealing with, like, teenage sex drives, and those are often, like, pretty hardcore. Mine was, anyway. Don't think that's atypical, but
yeah, fair enough. Okay, so impactful relationships in your life. Let's actually back up. How old are you when you first had sex?
Oh man, it was right around eighth grade the first time.
Okay, and so
that's the first time I'd done anything more than kissing.
Okay, like, so for our audience, and he will clarify in just a minute, but I want to discuss sex. So I define sex as oral sex, anal penetration. I would even go so far as to say manual penetration, and of course, I'm sorry, manual penetration. Manual stimulation, there it is, and then what everyone would define as sex at under our social norms, which is penile vaginal penetration. So all of those things I consider to be sex. So at what was that?
Yeah, with that being the standard, that was basically it, right?
Minus anal though, correct?
Well, yeah, I never really had much anal until I did it a couple times, I guess, in my like early 20s.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah.
But yeah, oral, manual stimulation, and penile vaginal sex all happened at 14. Correct.
Yeah, I don't even know if I was 14 or not. Okay. I'm not sure how old I was, honestly. Okay.
And then did you remain sexually active into adulthood, or like?
No, and this is actually kind of where church ties back into the whole thing, right? Okay. It's because shortly after that is when I met this other person and started participating in the church. And you know, it's kind of like the standard thing with, you know, Christian churches, but like, sex is bad, don't do that, you know, at least before marriage, mm-hmm. type deal, you know. And there was a lot of focus on that, obviously, and especially around teenagers. Yeah. And yeah.
Excellent. So as we talk, I'll probably ask things about, like, just as it gets brought up, about, you know, these things you've mentioned with your upbringing, because I do think that it really does impact your psychology and your sexuality. I don't think there's actually, you know, plenty of psychological research out there that shows that's the case.
Yeah, totally.
So let's move on though. How do you prefer to masturbate? And before you answer that question, I'd like to ask you, are you circumcised or uncircumcised?
I am uncircumcised. I'm really tired. I am circumcised.
Okay. So
docking collar is still intact. Been removed. Jesus.
he really wants to be uncircumcised, apparently, just to see.
It's true. They took it off without asking.
It's true. So how do you prefer to masturbate?
Generally, like, you asked this question last time, and I'm trying to pull up what it was. Oh, yeah. So basically, like, I just kind of like find a private spot, whatever that might be. Like, usually now that I'm an adult, or, you know, whatever, it's my bedroom. Mm-hmm. But yeah, generally I just don't use a lot of lube and just sort of, and like no toys generally either, because, you know, I just sort of go to it. It's just easier and quicker that way. Like, no, like, minimal cleanup, obviously, you know.
Yeah,
there's gonna be some just by default.
So, I mean, you don't have to masturbate to orgasm, but it's kind of fun. So,
I mean, for me, I like, I do a lot of utilitarian masturbating though. Like, right, I've got a headache, or I'm feeling like crummy or something, or
that's true.
It's like, it's, you know, that's another thing that I frequently do it for, is just to kind of like reset my mental and physical state when I'm feeling horrible. You know?
Yeah. So this actually reminds me of something that, the reason I kind of came up with this question, was I remember one time we were in Florida and I was kind of loosely seeing someone else. I are polyamorous. I don't think that got brought up this time, in our debacle of multiple podcast recordings. So we're polyamorous, and I was seeing someone, and this person was pretty kinky. like very much into the kink community in South Florida, and like to try all kinds of different stuff. And so we actually were playing with the
violet wand.
Yeah. And he
it is literally like having a small Tesla coil shooting lightning bolt at your nuts, assuming that's where you're aiming it.
Yeah, I don't think we aimed it at your nuts at
no.
all.
That was a no-go zone. With people. Yeah, I'm pretty sensitive there.
But
a lot of things hurt bad.
I remember he invited you in at a certain point, and he liked to use toys, and he had one of those little bullets. And I remember him placing it up against the base of your shaft. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. That actually that felt decent, but I think it probably would have worked better if it was like a bit stronger. Like,
yeah.
Bullets but aren't necessarily, like, the strongest little
I remember
toys in
you
the
being kind of surprised by, like, how much you did enjoy it. Like, you were kind of like,
oh, hey.
Whoa.
Yeah, no, totally. That was, yeah, that was a thing.
Yeah. So, he has masturbated with toys. So, what are your favorite sexual fantasies? What are your go-tos? Any trends you notice?
Yeah, totally. Like, so it's kind of interesting. So just like in terms of trends, because that's the first thing that's like popping into my head. Mm-hmm. Like, I tend to go on kicks of things. I'm generally like really turned on by like people masturbating. Like, mm-hmm. for some reason, that's just super hot to me. Okay. And you know, and oftentimes I'll like remember past situations that I was in, like whatever happens to be tickling my fancy that I might have done at some point, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like a lot of that's also tied to the peak sexual experiences that I know you're going to ask me about a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, just sort of, you know, a lot of just memories of people I was with and things that were like particularly awesome or unexpected or, you know, that like maybe it was an experience I had for the first time. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's kind of vague because I have trouble pulling it up because it's just like not on the forefront of my mind. Like the specifics are not coming.
That's okay. Well, the next question, which I'll ask in just a second, will probably be more specific, and we'll probably link back to the fantasies. So both of these questions, what are your favorite sexual fantasies? And the next question, which is what have been some of your peak sexual encounters? I actually borrowed from the book The Erotic Mind by Jack Morin. If you guys haven't read it, I highly encourage you to read it. It is, you know, if you're really curious about what kind of stimulates your sexuality, as far as your psychology is concerned, we're not talking about, like, you know, Cosmo's 10 ways to get what you want sexually. I just want to be very clear that that's, you know... If you want to learn about yourself sexually, I highly encourage you guys, read it. But he actually, looked into, favorite fantasies and sexual, peak sexual encounters to discover what he calls the four cornerstones of eroticism. And you guys will probably hear me bring this up many times. First of all, I love the idea of analyzing your sexuality, but also just bringing up and hearkening wonderful memories about sex. I think it's just such a lovely experience. So can you tell me about some of your peak sexual encounters, like specific things that stick out for you? Like, I was in my first orgy, or like I hadn't seen this person in forever, and you know, this is what we did.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, so I think my peak.
I think you can talk about a few.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I was gonna say, because I think the biggest one was like we'd gone to what was my second sex party, I believe, like on my second to last trip out to Portland, which is where I am now, before Carly moved out. But anyway. So one of my peak sexual encounters was like just some aspects of this sex party, right? So like, and just to kind of set the scene and how things worked was, you know, like there was like a kind of like we were at a person's house, and like it was the living room was kind of like a low-key chill zone, and then there was like a bedroom with this king-size bed, and like there were people piled on it doing various things consensually, very important dimension.
But also sexual. That was
yeah,
where
consensually sexually. Yeah, yeah, that's where like that's where, you know, if you wanted to penetrate or do oral or what have you, like mm-hmm. whatever, you know. It was actually like there's just so much going on and it was kind of overwhelming. So it's like I don't even know what the hell's going on around me, like except like what I was participating in directly, right?
Yeah. I feel yeah. like that's a major part of sex parties is
yeah,
just
like,
being like I don't remember hardly anything except for these very vivid, like this very vivid image and this very vivid image and etc.
Yeah, like if you're having a good time, you know, and it's like you're not stressed out or whatever, maybe even if you are, if you've got like the positive endorphins going, it's great. But like one of the things that I very specifically remember is I was having intercourse with this person. I was having sex with them, and I remember and I don't use names because I don't want to out random people because that's not cool, but
yeah, you don't have to get that specific.
Yeah, but anyway, so yeah, I kind of remember being on the bed and having sex with them, but I also felt like a bunch of people moving around, like so you get like you can feel the bed just sort of oscillating from all this activity. And mm-hmm. then like, you know, and like maybe you're close enough to someone where you can feel their leg rubbing up against you, like based on what's going on. And there's all sorts of really awesome sounds and it just like smells like sex, like no one's business.
Yeah.
You know, for some people that might be unpleasant, but I rather enjoy that. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, yeah,
but just like the chaotic nature of it is something that is definitely one of my peak experiences. And, you know, and I kind of struggle with that because, like, I have a lot of anxiety around parties and things like that. And, like, I've been to some where it just wasn't super awesome for me.
Yeah.
And, like, I totally psyched myself out and just wasn't feeling great about things. And, yeah.
So, two things. I think I totally agree with you that more bodies is often an amplifier. And sometimes anxiety can be, like, and I mean anxiety as in, you know, the umbrella of, like, a little bit of fear, feeling excitement, etc. Those, it you know, and this goes back to Jack Moran again. He talks about at times that can be a total mood killer, and at other times, it really amps things up.
Totally, yeah. Like the like one thing that really like made it like all the more awesome for me was just like the level of tension.
Mm-hmm.
Like just sort of like there was a little bit of nervousness, of course, but just like a lot of like I don't know what to expect, what's going to happen, but like in a good way.
Yeah,
you know?
And then the other thing that I think is really interesting to hear you say is that and I know you have social anxiety because we've talked about it, and yet so you just met a coworker of mine who you hadn't met, which is generally kind of weird, but and she talked to me the day afterward and said, oh, I love John. Like he's so outgoing and gregarious. And that's the way I see you. And like, I actually say, oh yeah, I rely on him to talk to other people while I observe them. And then I make my move. And so we kind of like have this team thing going on where like I hang back or like I make him talk to the Uber drivers or the Lyft drivers. Like, because I'm like, I'm done being social. We went out. I'm finished.
Yeah, no, totally. It's actually kind of a funny thing because like it and this also like kind of ties back to my experiences in both like group sex situations is like sometimes I'm just like I'm on it and like I feel natural and normal despite being super nervous, but then other times like I just got like anxiety through the roof and I just like struggle to communicate like an intelligent human being.
Yeah.
And I mean of course like in social situations where you're just like randomly hanging out, like it doesn't hurt to have a couple drinks in you to like not be so worried, you know.
Yeah.
Still notice it, but it's a little bit easier to overcome.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we've every sex party we've been to, we've either had a little bit of alcohol or a little bit of pot. Pot is legal in Oregon, so it's pretty easy to come by if you're listening to this not in Oregon or Colorado or Washington or California. We're taking over, guys.
Yeah.
It's happening.
That's actually kind of interesting too, because that's the thing I like in group sex situations, I try not to like have too much, and generally I can't smoke weed, otherwise I'd be taking a nap while everyone else is having fun, and that would be,
yeah,
I'd probably regret that, I'd imagine.
Yeah. I've definitely been in a few sex party situations where I had too much to drink and didn't necessarily, I don't know, it was fine, like I don't feel like it wasn't consensual or anything, but it just, it would have been a hell of a lot more fun if I'd been more in my head. So
yeah, totally. You want to be sex, present for it, right?
Yeah, later sex parties, totally. I tend to have like one or two drinks, and then I'm like a little bit lubricated, you know. But cute little sex pun. But yeah,
holy giggity, Batman!
Get a little bit lubricated, and then I'm good to go. I do like to smoke a little bit of pot, especially THC pot, because I think sex on pot, especially high THC, is like the most insane thing. We can talk about the time that I squirted on you for like a good 45 minutes.
That was insane.
I think we had taken edibles.
Yeah. Yeah. I like sex with body high the most.
Yeah.
But I'm such a lightweight that I can't do it very often. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a special occasion type thing. Any other peak sexual encounters that,
I mean, that's the only one that really kind of comes to mind right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there were a couple of, like, you know, situations with, there was one person in Miami that I had traveled out, like, so when I'd moved, I had to travel back for work, and then during one of these work trips, I was with someone, and I don't know, there was just sort of, like, some level of compatibility and, like, kind of, like, frenetic, chaotic, just really into each other sex, and like this is the first time that this person and I had sex, and that's fairly atypical that it's just like that awesome, like straight out of the gate, like that's fairly rare. Yeah. So but that was another one. And mostly it's not, and mostly like for me it doesn't really revolve around the specific sex acts in that case. It was totally about just the like energy, the nature of how everything felt and how it moved and how it just sort of worked.
Yeah.
We have someone tiptoeing near us.
It's fine. We live with a roommate, so. And since we just messed up with that podcast, deleting it. Sorry. It's our fault. Okay. So, I am curious about, I like to ask people about the role of shame in their life. In general, and
oh yeah,
in
totally. That's a good one.
Particularly with sexuality, there's just so many ways that, I mean, I think most of us have had some level of shame in our lives, like in our sexuality specifically. And the way that we deal with it is so varied.
No, totally. Yeah. Okay. So this is interesting. So like, you know, I was talking about my parents, and generally, like specifically, sex was cool within the confines of like marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, within, you know, some sort of married relationship, which is, you know, one way of looking at things, I guess. But it did, like over time, it did kind of affect me. Like I always felt. And it wasn't even like specifically just surrounding sex. It was like masturbation, like sexuality in general. Like I always felt like super guilty about having feelings and urges, and like, God forbid I actually did something with someone, you know, like that wasn't, yeah, particularly comfortable. But then like the religious aspect hit, and there was like this whole nother level of pressure, right? Because there's this giant deity that's out there and like can crush you like an ant, you know, and you know, it sees everything and knows what you're doing, and you know, so like that was, and could even see inside your thoughts. And so like, it was just like, there was like an epic amount of pressure, and like, but naturally just like my hormones, because I'm a teenager and my body's doing what it's supposed to be doing, like totally managed to overcome that to one extent or the other.
Yeah. I think that's really powerful too. You said a lot there that, that I have a lot to comment on. I think that the idea that a god can see into your thoughts is one, kind of invasive and violating, right? If you really, like, if you kind of take a step back and think about it, right?
Oh, no, like, totally.
If our parents did that, right, if they could see into our brains, if they, you know, when parents listen in on phone calls or snoop, like, that's violating. And so I think that that must be so difficult to incorporate into your sexuality. But also, as someone who adamantly believes that sexuality is absolutely natural, and you know, you mentioned, like, yes, your teenage desires overcame that, right? They just kind of powered through all your religious beliefs.
Yeah, like, but it's a little more complicated than that, right? Because, like, it wasn't like I stopped all sexual activity, you know.
Right.
But, like, but it's just sort of interesting because, like, bye. Little inter-house shenanigans there. But, yeah, it was kind of interesting because, like, I would do what I feel like a lot of people do in that situation, and they're kind of, like, skirting around, right? You're like, well, sex is specifically, you know, penis and vagina, like, if you're straight, right? Or, I don't know. You just like that combination of genitals for some reason, I guess it's more specifically a better way to put that. But, like, you know, like, you'd skirt around that by doing things like, oh, well, we're just gonna, like, do mutual masturbation, or maybe, you know, for some people it's oral or anal or, yeah, you know, whatever. And so I think that's kind of an interesting way that people, I certainly knew people that got around it that way. And, like, I sort of did to some extent as well.
Okay. So there wasn't so much, like, just powering through and then feeling guilty.
Oh, no.
And
no,
feeling
totally.
Shame,
like,
about it.
I definitely do sex acts, but then I would, like, feel super horrible about it for, okay, you know, afterward. But also, like, so it was like this really weird conflict of just, like.
So, like, you justified it in the moment and then.
Yeah.
And then felt so guilty.
Yeah, totally. Not only justified, but, like, there's this powerful drive that's, like, you know, difficult to ignore.
Or, no, I'm saying, like, justified it in the eyes of God, right? In your, like, mind.
Oh, no, I totally justified it legalistically. Like, I knew better. You know, like, if that's my set of beliefs, and, like, I was like, oh, no, I know that I fucked up, but at least I didn't fuck up that bad. You know, there was kind of, like, some, like, maneuvering around, you know, what I had actually done.
I read Dante's Inferno, in the seven circles of hell, and it's kind of like that, where it's like, well, I could be in, like, the seventh circle of hell,
yeah,
but
exactly.
I'm in the first. It's fine.
Sure, this sucks, but yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever felt like you had to? So that, I shouldn't say had to. That's totally the wrong word. Have you ever acted out shame in any way in your sexual acts? And I want to be very clear that I don't mean in a non-consensual way, but have you ever, like, I know people who take shame and they kind of turn it on its head in their sexuality, and it's kind of like a really empowering fuck you to the way that they grew up. Have you ever done that?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I don't really think I have.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, and even when I was with the church still, I had a sense that I'm like, well, you know, and, like, at this point, like, obviously my connection with religion looked a lot different, and now it's kind of non-existent, except that it's sort of a thing that I understand from experience in the past, right?
Yeah.
But, like, at the time, my natural inclination towards, like, science and explaining the world around me through fact and stuff was becoming the loudest voice in my head, you know, in terms of, like, what was taking up most real estate. And eventually I'm just like, look, like, around, you know, in your teens, you know, back in the day when you lived to 30, you were an elder. Like, God forbid, like, I would be an elder right now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I guess life experience would have been different back then, but yeah. Anyway, but, like, so you're in your teens, you're halfway through life, basically, and, like, your body's waking up and doing all these things because it's time for your body to do it, right?
Yes.
And so I kind of, like, took that realization from a biology standpoint a little bit more to heart and was like, okay, like, there are risks associated with this, and, like, bad things can happen that hurt people, you know, like an accidental pregnancy, transmission of STIs, so on and so forth, right? Mm-hmm. There are things that can happen, but if you have the knowledge and you do things, you know, correctly, you significantly limit those risks. And, you know, so my understanding became a lot more about like, okay, my body is doing exactly what the hell it is supposed to do. These urges are natural. There's nothing screwed up about them. Like, you know, you don't run around in public, you know, unless you have fun making people super uncomfortable, which I do to some extent, don't get me wrong, but, yeah, just, you know, it's nothing to necessarily just be ashamed of and hide and feel horrible about. It's just your body doing what it does, and when you can let go of that shame, like, things just get so much better. Like, sex actually becomes pleasurable and not like, oh my god, a release of a thing and then like some feeling of shame afterward that just totally screws with that good feeling that you have.
Yeah,
you know, whether that sex is with a committed partner or someone that you just met or someone that you just sort of have sex with, like, who knows, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, the point being that, like, just the act itself is just something that your body wants to do, you know, for most people, because there is an asexuality spectrum too, and some people are less interested in sex just generally than others, but but yeah, I mean, you know, at least from my experience, that's kind of, that was very liberating, and I was sort of like, you know what, my body's doing what it's supposed to do, there are people that want to do it with me, we're doing it, it feels good, that's wonderful, and let's not be idiots about it, like, hooray, right?
Yeah, so science kind of helped you work through any shame that you did have.
Yeah, like my yeah, basic understanding of biology.
Yay, science.
Yeah, kind of an interesting thing, right?
So just, I want to ask you a question. So you, I think this is twice now that you've mentioned the idea of sex as a release.
Yeah, totally.
Can you talk more about that? I guess I have never experienced or even thought of sex as that, as simply a release. So I'm curious, like,
sorry about that sniffle, everyone.
Where did that come from?
The sniffle?
No.
Yeah, it's playing. Yeah, like, for me, it kind of come, like, especially earlier on in my sexual, my sex life, it was, you know, kind of like in the same way that, like, I don't know if you do this or anything, but, like, if you have a stomach ache or a headache or you're, like, particularly tired or something, like, you might masturbate because that rush of endorphins, like, helps kind of reset you and make you feel better, right?
Yeah.
However temporary that may be, but, you know, it helps, right?
Yeah.
But also, like, as just, like, a release of that urge to have sex with someone, just, like, at a kind of like a baseline.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And if you're kind of, like, intentionally denying yourself and walling that off, like, okay, it builds. And, like, the release is a big deal, and it feels good, but
then there's so much tacked onto it.
Yeah, exactly, right.
Okay.
So it becomes less about, like, just getting that kind of basilar animal urge out, and more about, yeah, totally taking care of that, but it also being, like, much more than that.
So it probably made sex a lot more genitally focused. Quick.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for example.
Down to business, not a lot of
there's making out and warming up, but it was like nothing like what it looks like now, you know, in general, right. when I'm having sex with someone.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, the name of the game is like, it's like the race to orgasm. I can't remember her name. I'll have to dig it out, but there's a fascinating woman that Sex Nerd Sandra interviewed. This is about 2 years ago. And she actually teaches people, women specifically. She teaches, and I think it's just cisgender women, just because of the way she teaches them to masturbate. But she teaches them how to, she calls it like the rocking method, the cupping and rocking. And you kind of cup like your female genitalia and you rock. But she talks about not bringing yourself to orgasm and then going out into the world. And, like, she said, you know, she's like, that kind of intention just makes you, like, really, it puts out a kind of energy, right? People respond to you. And, like, I dated a woman once who was used to talk about, like, I don't know what it is about the world, but they always know when I've just had sex. And I think it's true. Like, you're just, like, you're hormones are, you know, you're relaxed, your endorphins are out there, like everything's just kind of hanging out. Or you're going to work
and you're like, God damn it, I hate the world. And then you're like, the next day you're coming, you're like, hey, everybody.
Yeah.
Watch me float around.
Yeah. So I guess, I can't remember how I was talking about that, but the idea of, oh yeah, that not everything has to be a raced orgasm.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
I liked orgasm, but I also have had perfectly wonderful sex where I haven't, because everything else feels really great. So, all right. So this kind of is a great segue. I was curious about this question. So this gets a lot more into the philosophy of sex, which is what I'm really aiming for with this podcast. But there's a lot of, I feel like there's a lot of like trust building that needs to happen with my guest, and also just background that people need to know. Especially in asking these last two questions. So I was wondering what you think being sexually healthy means to you. And I want to go ahead and just get out of the way that I'm going to assume that everyone that comes onto this podcast is going to say being sexually healthy is getting tested, is making sure that, you know, you eat well and sleep well and, you know, you're very conscientious about the way that you take recreational and prescription drugs, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you control for contraception. I think, you know, yeah, that can be agreed upon. So I want to know, I'm curious about, you know, what it means to be sexually healthy mentally, emotionally, and psychologically with regard to your sexuality.
Yeah, like for me.
Or like what you...
Yeah, what I perceive to be bright. Yeah, I think like to be really sexually healthy, like I think the absence of shame, or maybe you have shame and you can use that to get you off, and like that's totally cool as long as you use it as like kind of a positive tool.
Absolutely.
But, you know, there's an absence of like negative feeling around just having sex in general, or, you know, maybe it's that... you know, you pick people that are good for you to have sex with, right?
And what do you think that
means? Or that if, so people that you can have healthy sexual relationships with, that like there's not some sort of weird power imbalance, there's not non-consensual aspects, you know. Mm-hmm. That gets a little bit squidgier when you get into kink. You know, I know a lot of people that are like really into like kind of like blurring the lines of consent, like within mm-hmm. very specific boundaries, and that's cool, but
right, but there's like a there's an agreement of consent with exactly, non-consent, right. So I
kind of want to put that out there, because I don't want people to maybe hear this and go, oh well, you know, I'm kind of into like edging that line, does that mean I'm not healthy? Like, and I'm not a trained professional, but I also don't think that makes you unhealthy sexually,
right? Well, and there's like
we're having a problem,
a phone interruption. There's like master-slave relationships where it's very obvious there isn't a way, what we would consider a power imbalance. But that's, again, it's agreed upon. It's a consensual decision that the two people involved in that relationship make to play with that power imbalance. And you and I have played with that power imbalance. Do you want to talk about one of my favorite things, like role play things to do?
Oh, actually, you should talk about it. It's much more fun when you do.
Okay, so I consider my work as a surrogate partner a sex, like it's a sector of sex work. So I think some of this comes, actually, I should, that's a chicken and egg. I actually think some of my desire to become a surrogate partner, outside of like my emotional literacy, is, that I've always been very fascinated with, I've always wanted to be a sex worker. I have had fantasies most of my life since I knew what a prostitute was, of being a prostitute. So and I have sometimes, and we don't really agree upon it beforehand. We tend to slip into it, where he will start talking to me and calling me his little whore and telling me what to do, sometimes controlling when I orgasm. I will say various things to him about that, you know, at, you know, where I'm, you know, yeah, and there, you know, there's usually talk of money, right? Because money is like,
yeah, that's one of the things that supposedly makes it so horrible, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like that makes it so, so bad. And so, yeah, so, I think, you know, I mean, obviously that is, would, could potentially be considered a power imbalance, or at least we're role playing a power imbalance. And you bossing me around and telling me that you can do whatever you want to me because you're paying me, you know, is, but it's agreed upon. It's,
yeah, exactly.
It's obviously something that, and that we feel is healthy.
Yeah. So. But anyway, yeah, it's just, you know, that's an important aspect of things, is like the fantasy aspect, right? You know, it doesn't always have to be the big fantasy, but like definitely helps if you know what your partner's into and, you know, like drives them crazy, or, you know, mm-hmm. like that's awesome. And, you know, and when that stuff's also very spontaneous, that's pretty fun too.
So fantasies are sexually healthy in your mind?
Yeah, totally.
And sharing fantasies?
Yeah, and I think definitely. And, you know, I think those fantasies are great so long as you're not fetishizing someone else over them. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of not cool, especially if they're not cool with that being the case or they're unaware of it. Like, that's kind of messed up. But,
yep.
Yeah, but, you know, but there are aspects, you know, like to sexual health, like not just like fantasy and all that stuff. But I also feel like... another interesting aspect is being honest with yourself about what you're doing and with whom and why.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of like understanding where you're coming from entering a sexual situation, more than just like, oh, well, I want to do this. Like, why are you doing this? You know, is it that you have a genuine interest in this other person, or are you sort of like leading them on with something, you mm-hmm. know, like on accident or on purpose, you know, like, because you don't want to like hurt people as well, because like you want to go, like if you're going to have a one night stand with someone, for example, you totally want to go into that knowing that it's like agreed upon that it's a one night stand. Maybe that changes later, whatever, but like you got to be, you know, you have, I think you have to be honest with yourself first and with the other person about what's going on and why.
Absolutely.
And that's very, it's a very, very big deal.
Yeah, and it's not always static, too. So making sure that, like, as it changes, you continue. You, one, check in with yourself, you know, and are always, like, making sure that, you know, what you, you know, that what you originally thought was honest and true still is, that that still stands. And then, of course, communicate it with that person.
Yeah, totally.
Because it does change, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, and there's another aspect as well. And I think it's also, like, I guess in... And at least this is a definition for me, but like sex doesn't always have to be super serious.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's important to be able to like, you know, like pause and laugh and like stuff's going to go wrong. Someone might fart, like, you know, who knows what, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. I mean, their bodies, like I think the other night we were talking and I was like, bodies are like, they're beautiful and wonderful and they're disgusting. Like,
yeah.
You know, like they fart. And
yeah,
they...
and if you're not cool with that, you got like, you're in for a rude awakening if you're going to be around anyone else like doing bodily function things with them.
Yeah.
Like, shit's going to go wrong. And, you know, like, it's just a fact of life.
And like, bodies are clumsy. I mean, arms get in weird spots or like, yeah, it's just.
Yeah, I've had some bad mishaps with stuff like that.
A sense of humor with sexuality, I think, is so important.
Yeah, totally.
Because it's just not all going to be completely fluid, or, you know, like your hair's going to get stuck, or it's not going to be completely fluids. Is that what you were going to say?
Beat me to my punchline.
Sexual pun number two.
Surprised that's all so far. How long have we been recording?
Like 40 minutes. So it's nice. One every 20 minutes. We're doing great.
Also, there might be a couple of outtakes, so if there's a weird audio transition, that's why. We're learning. Leave us alone.
Okay, so I want to ask this last question.
That's the sound of me biting you.
Oh, okay. Save that for later. What aspirations do you have for your sexual life? And I'm going to start with an example. So for me, I am completely consumed with foreplay, with just that arousal. A coworker and I were talking the other day, and she's the first person that has ever described it as this besides me. She says, sometimes it feels like my vagina is sighing when someone's just really getting your motor going, and it's basically like your vagina just like sucks up and it's just like, yes. And then you just stay in that space of yesness, of just like, wow, this feels so fucking good. And what I notice for me is that I want so much to please my partner, and I assume that they want to be generally focused, and I don't necessarily spend enough time playing with their neck, you know, like sucking their neck, biting their neck a little bit, and like biting their wrists, or you know, dragging my hair. I know that's a favorite, that's why I mentioned that. Dragging my hair down their back or whatever. I feel like I do that and then I get anxious and I'm like, oh God, okay, now we need to move on and it's time to suck his dick. Like, let's, like, that's I'm sure that's what he wants.
Wrong.
And I, like, a goal for me, a goal. I explicitly use the word aspiration and not goal because, one, the word ass is in it, but that's actually not true. But goal just sounds so, like, capitalistic and just, like, you know, you meet this goal and then you move to the next goal and then you move to this.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's like, and so, you've talked to me about this before, but it's like goal-oriented sex is not necessarily particularly awesome. It's not like you do right. the thing to get onto the thing to but get onto the thing to get where you're going.
But like, I think yeah. we can have, like, desires for our sexual future, right? And so the desire for my sexual future is to spend more time building that tension. Now, I don't know if men experience the vagina sigh, but it's not the vagina, it's a penis. Like, I know you're laughing at me, but it's possible. But, like, I don't, you know, but I would like to create the vagina, the vagina sigh. We're going to coin this term. It's going to happen. And, you know, I'd like to create that for, like, you or my other partners. So that's an aspiration that I have for my future sexual life. Do you have aspirations? And I know this is a question that no one thinks to ask, which is why I picked it.
Yeah, totally. Actually, I've got kind of a weird one that's sort of connected with, like, what I would call more social and political awareness. Mm-hmm. And that is, I tend to be, even with people that we've, like, that I've established the fact that we're both attracted to each other and, like, we're interested in having sex and stuff, like, I struggle really hard coming on to people. Because, like, you know, you've, like, everyone has a woman friend or someone who has done that Facebook post where they're like, some fucking asshole, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, like, I really super nervous about...
You don't want to be that fucking asshole.
Exactly. It's not that I don't want to be, like, publicly shamed by name or not, but it's more like, you know, like, I don't want to be the person that makes this person super uncomfortable, or I don't want to, like, push a boundary or come on too strong or whatever. And, like, that is a thing I struggle with a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's totally put a damper on, like, my confidence with new partners and other people. And it's like, it's a really confusing aspect of my sexuality now. Mm-hmm. And one of my aspirations is to kind of overcome that and get back to a place where I'm kind of like, okay, like, this person's interested, we'll communicate, but I'm not gonna have this thing in the back of my head the whole time and be, like, really worrying about it. It really screws with my head, and I know that there are people that I've been interested in the past that have kind of, like, decided kind of not to pursue me because I don't push hard enough. Because
they want someone that will command them.
I don't do that because I feel like, you know, that's not the right dynamic to have in a relationship for me as, like, a cishet male mm-hmm. with anyone else, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that, you know, for reasons that are both around my politics and life philosophy, like, I don't tell people what to do, except in very specific situations, right? You know.
Yeah, I mean, we've been together for 4 years, and so
I think that comfort's already built, and, like, we know where each other are coming from, but, like, you know, what I really don't want to do is inflict harm on people or, you know, hurt their feelings or mm-hmm. make them feel super uncomfortable. Like,
yeah.
You know, I've accidentally done that enough in my life to a lot of people, so it was a big deal to not do that anymore, but now it's kind of like, I need to strike a balance in the area of sexuality with that. And it's quite the struggle.
Yeah. Have you ever existed in a space where you did feel like you felt comfortable dominating a little bit in the bedroom and kind of having that?
It isn't even about domination. Yeah. It's about the approach to the whole thing in general.
I think that's where I misused the word. I think it's that, like,
because it's before
animalistic, you, like, ugh, like you just want each other so bad and you just let go. Because I am finding that it is not a 10-2. Let's be honest. I only date men who are feminists, you know, or who at the very least are trying to be feminists, who are trying to be not assholes, and are pushing back against their socialization. And what I am finding is that is impacting our sexuality, because this person doesn't just want to, like, throw me on the bed and, like, you know, like, grab my legs and just pull them open and, like, lick my pussy to oblivion, like, you know? And so there's this kind of element missing because there's this timidness. So have you before experienced that, where there was this lack of timidness and it was just, like, animalistic throwing down on the bed and going at it?
I mean,
besides you and I, because I think you and I have that sometimes.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I don't have a lot of problem doing that. Once I have, like, kind of established that that's what should go on. So, like, I struggle is just, like, the general approach to people I like, or, like, like, you know, meeting someone that we're obviously sexually interested in each other and, like, really struggling with that and, like, interpreting signals and making sure that I interpret them right, and not being, I don't want to be that guy that where someone's like, oh, hi, good day, how are you doing, you know, and they're like, oh, that person wants to fuck me, which is absolutely stupid.
Right, she's obviously into me, she talked to me.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to, like, accidentally, like, walk into, like, maybe not that, you know, egregious of an example, but, you know, that space. And that's a thing that I struggle very deeply with.
Yeah,
just because of my understanding of, like, you know, where I am and where, just who I am at a level of how I was born, like, tends to affect the power I have around other people, and also how other people perceive people like me, you know, at large, systemically, you know, and for good reason, like, let's be honest, you know.
Yeah, of course.
But, like, you know, that's kind of an interesting area that I struggle with, just on the general approach. But, you know, like, if I'm with someone and I know they're into that and I have a sense that that's really what they want, then, like, yeah, totally.
Okay.
But yeah, the approach is very difficult, and just, like, I kind of shoot myself in the foot a lot, being worried that I'm, like, misinterpreting cues. I mean, it's kind of like at the point where I feel like the only time that, like, I'm welcome is when someone, like, you know, drives a truck by waving at me and it says on the side, you know, like, John, I want to fuck you, you know, and they're waving at me specifically, you know.
Yeah. It's kinda, this John too.
I would like to be not in that space, you know. I'd like to be able to interpret things and, like, do a better job flirting back and forth and kind of, like, gauging where people are and, like, not having to be so self-conscious about it.
That's a
big thing that, you know, especially since the election, it's been very interesting. I've been feeling that a lot more acutely.
Absolutely. So that actually leads me into a follow-up question that I had thought of, and it's really related. Do you feel like masculinity, as it's been defined for you in society, impacts your sexuality in any way?
That's kind of an interesting question.
Or has the past even, and now it doesn't so much, or whatever?
I mean, maybe a bit, and not, you know, and not just sexually, but, like, in approach to relationships. You know, there were definitely certain ideas that now I, you know, kind of would classify as, like toxic masculinity and hyper-masculinity and things like this, right? But, like, there were certain expectations of me emotionally that I couldn't, you know, like, if I felt something or I cried or I whatever, right? You know, it was, like, a very negative thing. And so I had to, like, exist in a role beyond that. And, like, I do think it affected me sexually and how I sexually interacted with partners. Like,
Did you?
I felt like I had to know what was going on and I had to lead and, like, you know, there wasn't, I had to show people, you know, like if someone of, like, I was relatively sexually inexperienced and so was someone else, I had to act like I knew what I was doing and, like, I had to, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, like, a lot of pressure to be an expert and, like, just be cool about everything and know what you're doing. And
yeah.
With, like, literally practically no information or experience.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you could be emotionally vulnerable with your partners? Did that impact your sexuality?
Sort of depended on who it was and where I was in my life.
Okay, so...
Yeah, because, like...
It wasn't necessarily masculinity that impacted that. It was the relationship and whether you felt safe in that relationship.
Well, yeah, and also, like, whether...
Emotionally safe.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, like, whether or not... But that also depended on how I thought my masculinity should be expressed.
Okay.
If that makes any sense. And, like, that changes over time. So, like, maybe, I don't know, you feel like you have to be the expert and do all the things, like, at one moment. And then the next moment you are totally allowed to enjoy sex. But when you get hurt, you can't talk about, like, emotionally hurt or something. You can't really talk about why that is.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, or it could just be, like, the kind of, like, another interesting aspect is kind of, like, it feels that in some segments of society, like, the only emotions you're really allowed to have are, like, some level of happiness, like, generally and broadly very neutral, or, like, anger, right?
Yeah.
And when that's the emotional range that you can express, that's very limiting in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And so, like, that has, that definitely comes through with sex, right? Because, like, it's fairly intimate type thing. You know, mm-hmm. So it's, you know, so I think that's actually a really interesting and kind of complicated question to answer.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's such a huge role in of vulnerability in sexuality. And I fully think that we do not, as a broader culture, really acknowledge that the role of vulnerability, right? I mean, in sexuality, first of all, you're naked, and given the way that we treat bodies in this world is abhorrent. And
also, like, when do you see naked people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, just in general, like, yeah. Maybe in a locker room, kind of, but, like, beyond situations like that, the only time you really see naked people, unless you're in the medical profession, for example,
mm-hmm.
Is going to be in sexual situations, or maybe you go to a nude beach or something, but, you know, a lot of people are still super put off by that just because of what you're talking about,
right?
Yeah. So, like, generally, nakedness is also connected with vulnerability because, like, generally you're only naked around people you're having sex with. So,
right.
There's a connection there.
There's so much with that, though. Because, you know, then we associate, as we do as a culture, that nakedness is always sexual, which is not true.
What?
But yeah, I mean, there's vulnerability in being naked, but there's also vulnerability in, like, you know, just a few minutes ago, we talked about, like, bodies being disgusting, right? Or, like,
mm-hmm.
or
even opening up about what you're into with mm-hmm. people, like, that can mm-hmm. also be super hard.
Telling someone, well, I don't know if it's worse for a woman or not, but telling someone that what they're doing doesn't really feel good is such a vulnerable space, because you know that they're really vulnerable and you don't want to hurt their feelings, but
yeah,
it doesn't feel good.
And going back to the question earlier, talk about another area that I think is really overlooked in, like, what is actually sexually healthy. Because, like, I'd like to amend my answer a little bit, because mm-hmm. that brings something up. Is, like, you got to be able to take feedback from other people. Like, and feedback could look for, like anything from, like, oh my god, that feels really good, more of that. Or, like, a little bit over here. Or, like, a little bit lighter. Or, yeah, I'm not really into that, do something else. Or maybe even, like, no, I'm done, stop. You know, like, that's also an important part of feedback, and you need to be able to just, like, and stop when someone is asking you to stop and not be, like, super pissed off about it. You can be bummed. I mean, that's whatever. But,
yeah.
You know.
Or even, like, slightly confused because, like, that's worked on the last four people you've been with, but it doesn't, you know. And that's okay to be like, oh, that's a bummer. I thought I nailed it, but, you know, this person doesn't work. That's okay to be confused or bummed even. But
yeah, like, being able to take criticism or feedback, rather. It's mm-hmm. not even necessarily criticism, it's just generally feedback, and, like, mm-hmm. act on it.
Yeah.
And not be an asshole about it is also a big part of sexual health as well.
Absolutely.
And being able to provide people feedback as well is very important.
Yeah.
Like if you don't like something or something's uncomfortable or you need someone to stop, you need to be able to say that to them, you know. I mean, and there are non-visual cues people can take, but, you know, I think it's super useful to be able to, like, just vocalize and be like, hey, whoa, or, yeah. Oh, yeah, more, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I will just beg to cisgender men out there to please create safe spaces for that, because I know as a person who has sex with men more than other folks... even with
cishet men more than other folks.
Yes. Thank you. That I definitely, it's not always just about that person. Like I've been conditioned to not say no, to not say, oh, that doesn't really feel that good. Can you change it? You know, try this. So sometimes if you feel like someone's reticent, if you kind of create a feeling of like emotional and psychological safety and that they're not going to, you know, that you're not going to be, rejected or even, criticized for, you know, expressing what feels good, or made to feel bad, like you're the bad person. 'Cause that happens a lot. So that's my plea to cishet men or just cis men in general. I mean, this applies in the gay community too. You know, there's a lot of misogyny that occurs in both the lesbian and the gay community. And you see that in sexual dynamics as well. But I wanted to mention a mutual friend of ours and her partner. We've been sexual with both of these people. And this person, I hope to interview her at some point. She is one of the most amazing people, like most amazing sexual communicators that I've ever witnessed in my entire life. I think she knows her body better than almost anybody I know. I feel like my body changes a lot. And so sometimes I'll be like, oh, try this. Never mind. Ooh, try this. And she's, you know, she'll be like, oh, that's not really doing that for me. And like, she'll be like, oh, but move here. And then it's like, boom, that feels amazing. And her partner, he is so responsive to it. And they're just like watching them be sexual together. Like
sex sparring.
It's like a dance.
Where every hit connects.
Yeah. Like it's just, and I admire them so much. And you know, I guess that's another sexual aspiration I have is to be more like this person, and feel, because I feel like you are the male counterpart, like her male counterpart, you were receptive to that. I just think I need to take a little more responsibility for my own body and my own pleasure sometimes and just, you know, express it in a, you know, she does it in such a blunt way and it's so admirable. It's really impressive, you know? So,
I can see how that'd be a really hard thing to achieve.
Yeah.
You know? But a really hard headspace to exist in where you can be like,
I don't think it is for her. I think it is for me because I'm just not that way.
But I also think that this person, I know who you're talking about, I also think this person's kind of atypical in their ability to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know a lot of people that are that good at doing that.
Yeah.
Or at least that I've been with or seen have sex with someone.
No, I would agree with
you. I can think of a few more people off the top of my head that probably exist in a similar space, but I just don't know. But by and large, I don't think most people are good at that.
Yeah. Oh, my God. We should make a course on just sexual communication, specifically sexual communication. Like, once you get the foundations of communication, now you go into this whole other world.
Yeah, that'd probably be pretty nuts.
Yeah, but it would be...
a lot of fun.
I think it'd be so useful. So, well...
would this class include demos? Because...
it could. It could be like a tantric workshop.
yeah, that's the ticket.
Well, thank you, John, for letting me interview you. And thank you, audience, for putting up with all the fuck-ups and the editing and all those things. I will get better at using pseudonyms properly, even when I'm comfortable with people. I will get better at the podcast.
And the weird sounds where I accidentally hit my microphone.
Yeah. This will...
And my allergy nose breathing sometimes.
It'll come together. So I hope you guys enjoyed this. And we will talk to you soon. Thank you, John, again.
No problem? Question mark? Oh, hi, Mom, just in case you're listening.
All right.